Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. It's August 21st, 2019. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. And if you'd like to call in with a question today, you may call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. So let's see what's going on. Looks like there's more activity going on the campus.
Hey, so is Jonathan going to come on next door here?
I don't know.
The husky dog is next door.
Jonathan,
the other studio.
I said hello to Jonathan. It's so funny because you don't know who Jonathan actually is, but
whenever you
see Jonathan, you're like, hey, you always want to say hello to Jonathan.
Oh, I know. It's very funny.
And he was very goofy.
Or maybe it's she.
That's true. And they were very willing to interact with us. They were very excited to see us. So I guess people are getting excited about being back to school. It looks like some of the students are back. Athletes and international students appear to be back.
Yeah. And I saw some moving in
activity
happening. But I think this weekend is
the official move-in date, I think, begins Friday.
Well, yeah. It's for some students, for like 4,000 of the students or something like that is what somebody told me. And then the following weekend is the big weekend.
Really?
I think so.
This weekend is not the main weekend of
moving? Or maybe there's already 4,000 of them here.
Right.
I
that makes more
remember.
Sense.
I don't know.
Well, there's definitely students around.
Things. There are. And there's like a gigantic new recreation center that's
going to be officially open.
I think it's actually officially opening up. Their ribbon cutting is maybe this weekend.
Oh, all right. And
that's what somebody told me.
Community members can join it.
That's true.
So if you're interested in that, you should contact the new athletic center and find out what that's all about, because it is open to community members. You said there's two pools?
There's two pools, 5 basketball courts, and a lot of stuff. Ton of stuff.
Well, if nothing else, I would like a tour.
Yeah, I would like to do the same. I mean, it'd be kind of cool if we could do that today while we're up here, but I don't know if that's going to be possible or not. I don't know if it's open to the public yet.
All right. So we'll see.
We'll pull on a door when we go by.
So let's check in with you. How is your... So I haven't talked to you in 2 weeks about this on the air, and let's hope that you're 2 weeks better. What's going on with your Lyme babesia Hashimoto's?
I'm 2 weeks better.
Are you really?
Yeah. You know, remember how I was telling you that I've had like good days and bad days?
Yeah.
And it's been a lot of up and down. There's more up than down now.
Yes.
Than there used to be. I haven't had any major... I was just having this conversation this morning at the community center with someone. I haven't had any of the major, like, oh, my God, I got to go crawl in bed and you know, because I'm cold and I'm chills and fever. That's all gone.
I haven't had
one of those. My knee is still not great. It still comes and goes. Today, I'm having a great day today.
That's good.
So that's good. But, you know, I mean, I'm still taking antibiotics.
Right.
I'm still doing all the stuff that you gave me.
Right.
So
you're still taking antibiotics. You're still taking Cefprazil. Right.
Yep.
So you're still on Cefprazil, which is a cephalosporin. And
for 2 more weeks.
Cephalosporins, by the way, can kill Lyme disease. They can also kill anaplasma and Ehrlichia. They can also kill Bartonella. And so if you had any of those, it could get those. As far as we know, you only had Lyme and Babesia. You could have had others that were hidden, but the Babesia took the Etovaquone and the azithromycin for, and you're not having the chills and sweats anymore. So that's good. And I wonder if that was because of the Babesia. Babesia will give you sweats. Lyme can as well, but Babesia definitely can. So I'm glad we found that. I had to pass in a Lyme sheet and a Babesia sheet to the state on your behalf.
Oh, really?
Yes. And the state seems to be getting a lot more on top of it. So when somebody comes back with a bunch of antibodies for the various tick-borne illnesses, I get a form that I have to fill. It's very easy. It's just a bunch of check boxes. Did you have, when was the onset? What symptoms did this person have? Was the onset in the past year? They just ask a bunch of easy questions, and then we fax it back and we put it in your chart, and that's that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to do one for both Lyme and Babesia for you. They were different sheets. So that was interesting. So the state tracks this so that they have stats. So that's a good thing. So you're a statistic.
Right. I'm a statistic.
I can't even tell you how many of those forms I filled out this summer. It's unbelievable. You know, 10, 20, a lot of forms. They keep coming in.
You think it's been a busier summer than normal?
Maybe. I'm not sure, but I think maybe. It seems like the people are getting it more and it's hitting them harder.
Hmm.
That's what it seems like. I'm not sure if that's true. I know that for me, when I go outside for any length of time, I have bug spray with me. And I'm going to start carrying a small bug spray with me on the bike. So, for example, what happened during the steeplechase was, I had to keep a friend company who was fixing a flat or waiting to be sagged. And so I felt like sitting down in the grass. So as soon as I do that, I want to have bug spray on. I'm just not taking any chances. I go out. We have the nice blackberries behind our yard. And so I go blackberry picking. I get the bug spray out. And I'm using natural bug spray. And I'm also using the Bio-UD. And I'm using it every time. I'm not taking any chances. And then do tick checks when I come back in.
That's just wise.
And so you can get little pocket-sized bug sprays. And you can get, conventional ones with DEET, and you can get herbal ones that you can get little sample sizes or little, pocket sizes. And those are really good to carry around. You can also get sunscreen bug spray in one. That's a thing as well. Whoever thought of that was very clever. That's a really good idea. So, all right. So now, so in terms of what you're taking natural medicine wise, You're still taking cemento and banderol and annula.
Yep.
And you're taking pinella and berber as well.
Yep.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. I have to talk to you about getting some more because I'm draining the bottles.
That's fine.
So that's okay.
And you're also taking monolaurin, right?
Yes.
Because monolaurin is a great thing to kill Lyme, and you're taking oregano oil.
As much as I can, it tends to come back and haunt me.
Oh.
So having some rejection problems in my gut with that.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
A little more intense than I can handle. So I take it every couple of days because it just doesn't,
Is oregano a mint?
I don't know. It makes me
It repeats on you.
It makes me burp.
Well, yeah. a lot of concentrated mint products, concentrated mint products tend to repeat on you. Yeah, it's a mint. Yeah, so oregano is a lot of herbs and spices are in fact mints. So your oregano, your marjoram, your rosemary, those are all mints. And so things in the mint family, mints tend to repeat on you. And there's a reason why. It's because the constituents of mint relax your digestive system. That's why they're really great for settling your tummy. But if they relax your lower esophageal sphincter, then they're going to repeat on you, and you're going to taste, well, mint. That's what happens. So that's what you got going on with the oregano. Because the oregano we give you is going to be very concentrated. If you put a little oregano in your food, I'm sure that doesn't repeat on you, does it?
No.
No.
No, 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 not at all. It's never a problem with regular food.
When I used to live in Newfoundland, they grow savory in Newfoundland. Savory is a prized herb in Newfoundland, and it's minty and a little strong tasting, and so a lot of people couldn't consume the savory either. And guess what family the savory's in?
Mint.
It's a mint.
There you go.
Yes, it used to be Labiatae family, but now it's the Lamiaceae family. So Labiatae would be their plants that have some kind of lips, but they changed it to Lamiaceae, which means it's plants with some kind of levels. So because lamia are levels. So I don't know why they did that. Anyway, so that's interesting. So good for you. So that's so great. You're coming right along, and people are always asking you, how are you doing? How are you doing? How are you doing?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm wondering if that knee, unfortunately the knee, you got Lyme arthritis.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the buggies got right in there. I think what we should be doing is some kind of antimicrobial poultice where we can drive antimicrobial substances into your knee.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought of the idea of injecting something into your knee, but a poultice would be a safer way to go, where you're already doing castor oil sometimes, right?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah,
but we need
I've been
to do
doing
some
that.
Kind
that
of
actually
a...
feels pretty good when I do the castor oil.
So we need to
that
do.
It's all sticky and weird.
It is sticky. Yeah. I know. Yeah. That's right. But so. If we could mix some kind of an antimicrobial herb in there, because you have CBD cream that you can use as well, and that's great. That's a great anti-inflammatory. And then the castor oil is going to be anti-inflammatory, and it's also going to tend to draw gunk out of your knee. But what you need is to drive something antimicrobial in there. And we have to figure out what we can. There's probably an antimicrobial salve that we can use that'll make it easy for you, as opposed to making an actual poultice. Because the poultice, you know, if you use a poultice, then you have to prepare the herbs every single time. So we have to figure out what herbs might be good to do, and one that might be good to do is oregano. We had an oregano salve, or a good antimicrobial salve that has stuff in it that would kill Lyme. You know what else would be good?
What?
Garlic.
Garlic.
Yeah, you could do a garlic poultice.
Yeah, let's do garlic.
Yeah, I mean, you'll smell like a salad, but...
I don't care.
But garlic is a great anti-Lyme. And so if you want, that would be easy to do. And you can do, you just have to see how to prepare the garlic so that it wouldn't burn your skin. So, yeah. And so if you had to, you know, and I could probably get garlic oil already prepared. So that's something we should look into. If you don't mind doing that, that would be something to do. You mix the garlic oil with the castor oil and then you drive that into the knee. And garlic is a great anti-spirochete, anti-Lyme. So
it'd be like a garlic oil?
Yes, we can get, garlic oil. I have to see if I can get some. We can always make it. And you can always crush garlic and just put it on there as a poultice. You can do that. That works. So and even if you didn't do it every day, if you did it a few times a week, it might help your knee. Just because, and you do it with the castor oil, because the castor oil is going to act as an agent to drive the garlic into your knee. Yeah. And you could throw oregano in there too. You know what else might work? I don't know if oregano works. I wonder if basil would work. It's just that we have a lot of basil.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, so speaking of basil, before we go on to our main topic of the day, I was in Portland, Oregon last week, and it was really fun. And one of the things they have in Portland, Oregon, is they have food truck pods. And so it's not like just one place in the city that has food trucks. There's pods all over the city. It's really cool. So you can go to this little courtyard. It's like going to food court in the mall, except way better. And they have all this interesting food. And so, for example, Eric and I went to a food pod at the corner of 12th and Hawthorne. And one of the things they have in Portland is this lovely natural soda company. And you pay a sum of money. And, you know, a flat sum of money, and then you could have all the soda you wanted. And they had these really interesting flavors. And one flavor that they had, which was mind-blowing, was basil lime. It was
really
so good. My goodness, it was a soda. It was so refreshing. Basil lime cucumber might work as well, I would think. But the basil lime together, it just went together so nicely. I think we should figure out how to make a dish that paired basil and lime. But as a drink, it was amazing. So you could do a mojito, and instead of using yerba buena or peppermint, you could use basil. Do a basil lime mojito. That would be intense. That'd be so good. All right.
Okay.
So I want to figure out how to make basil lime syrup so I can have it as soda, because it was so amazing. And you know, no, I can't go to the farmer's market this weekend. I have to wait till next weekend. Yeah, because we're going to Pennsylvania Dutch Country.
That's right, we are.
Yeah, so that's exciting.
Yeah, we're going away.
All right, so let's talk about our main topic. So I wanted to touch on this because I touched on this before on a different show. But I wanted to talk about, once again, I wanted to address the health topic of mass shootings.
Yeah.
And how mass shootings, what the health connections to mass shootings, what the health issues are around mass shootings, both for the shooters and for the victims, and you know, how they affect society. And so mass shootings, one of the things that's scary about mass shootings is that they can be contagious. Mass shootings tend to recur within a 2-week window. And intense media coverage drives the contagion. So the fact that they keep showing it on TV drives the contagion. So someone who's thinking about doing it will watch it.
You don't think about it that way.
Yes. Yeah. And so shootings happen in countries where the shooting numbers go down in countries where there is more gun control. And you have more shootings when there's a good access to guns and a venue. So this whole idea that it's all about mental health, it's partially about mental health, but it's not. If you there's no guns, there's no shootings. You can't shoot. Yeah, you can't have a shooting if you don't have a gun. So that's what the research shows, that mass shootings are contagious. We had three of them in a week. They had the one in Gilroy, California, and then El Paso, Texas, and then Dayton, Ohio. And they happened within a week. And scientists who study it show that the incidents usually occur in clusters. They tend to be contagious, and media coverage tends to drive them. They analyzed this data at Arizona State University, and they used data that USA Today put together. The lead researcher at Arizona State University had spent her career modeling the spread of infectious diseases. So she likened the mass shootings to an infectious disease into a similar mathematical model. And they found that for the mass killings, that means there were at least four people killed. There's significant evidence of contagion. And they found significant evidence of contagion in the school shootings as well. And they would spread like a contagion, spark more shootings. So one happens and you see another few happen right after that. Jillian Peterson said this. So Towers and her colleagues also found that what set apart shootings that were contagious were the amount of media coverage. Where there were four more people killed and even school shootings, they tended to get national and international media attention. And the window where a repeat shooting is likely to happen is about 2 weeks. So it's a form of social contagion.
Right, right.
Yeah. Hmm. So, and there's suicide contagion too. So for example, when Robin Williams committed suicide, there was a contagion of suicides after that.
Right, because people justify it.
Yeah, right.
Especially if it's someone famous.
Right.
You know, someone famous who takes their life is going to be, it's going to be a catalyst.
Right. And so people who are thinking about it might go ahead and do it, which is really unfortunate.
Such a tricky thing. Because my big thing is, and of course there are people that scream about you can't compare the two. And the comparison that I have often brought up is that we have as many gun deaths per year as we do traffic deaths per year.
Right.
And
yeah.
Or it's very, very close. It's within a few thousand.
Right.
And so anyway, I have this little piece, and I think it'd be interesting. And this is all about how you can't compare traffic deaths with gun deaths because they're two different things. Traffic's, you know, I'm giving the counterpoint here. Okay. So the traffic death is generally an accident. It's not intentional. Although there are people that have used vehicles to do, you know, damage like you would with a firearm.
Well, that inebriated guy who hit those cyclists in Kalamazoo.
There's that, and then there was that big rally that was down south in Virginia where the
in Charlottesville.
Yeah, in Charlottesville, and then that was a vehicle was used to cause death there, and that was intentional. But anyway. It says here, the nature of the casualties, the vast majority of car deaths are accidents. They are occasionally people who crash their cars intentionally, and there are some vehicular homicides, but most of the automobile deaths are unintentional. Most gun deaths, however, are intentional. Almost two-thirds are suicides. Almost a third are homicides. The rest are accidental gun deaths. Tens of thousands of car deaths are unfortunate, but less disturbing because there's no deadly intent behind them and because of the amount of time we spend in our cars because we continually strive to make cars safer and driving safer. It's easier to accept those accidental deaths. Tens of thousands of suicides and homicides by gun are harder for people to swallow. Would some of those people kill themselves or others without guns? Sure. are half the suicides and more than two-thirds of the homicides committed with guns instead of other means for a reason, definitely. So anyway, there's a huge, huge piece here, though, that we are taking, you know, we're taking, we have to look at. We have to bring it into the whole context of it. And that is that you are required to have a license to drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
You are not required to have a license.
To own a gun.
To own a gun.
Right.
So, you know, more food for thought for people who are interested in, you know, talking
well,
about
this. Well,
and
the big question that I have is, isn't there the number of gun deaths in the U.S., isn't it like far surpassed, doesn't it far surpass other developed countries where they also have guns?
Per capita, yeah.
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 Do you have any stats on that?
I'll look.
Yeah, I thought that there were stats. But what one of the things that we see here is that, like I said, there's a contagion that when somebody who is actively suicidal or actively wanting to follow that script, they see somebody do it and then they follow it. And there's this element of wanting notoriety in death that you don't have in life. So if a person feels disaffected, then they might do something like this and they figure, I'll show them, you know, that kind of idea. And there are people, and the last one, the one in El Paso, that fella, he put it in his manifesto that he wanted to emulate the shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand. And of course, once that happened in Christchurch, New Zealand, the whole country modified their gun policies. Mm. You know, they immediately went away. You know, they immediately did something about it because that's how everyone else rolls. So, I mean, it's a health issue because, you know, to us, because there's a mental illness component to it. There's a public health issue to it. My concern is that, you know, when people have large amounts of guns, that they're going to use them and they're going to use them in ways that are going to hurt people. And so as a naturopathic physician, you know, it's a health hazard. It's very simple. So in countries where mass killings are less common, they handle gun issues differently. Other high-income countries start off with many fewer guns and much stronger gun laws. And when there's a mass shooting in another country, it's a time when everyone is thinking about guns and it becomes an opportunity to think about what kind of gun laws are needed. And it's a time when countries improve their gun laws and make them stronger. That's what they do in other countries. We have a really hard time doing that because we have an incredible gun lobby. And the idea that people would... So they interviewed this fellow, David Hemingway, who is a... So David Hemingway is a professor of health policy at Harvard. So they interviewed him, and he had some interesting comments on it. And he said that there's a lot of people, we watch too many shows on TV where the good guy with the gun is the big hero. And that one of the things he says, we've heard this before, is that people in the U.S. are not well trained. And if you go to a gun range and shoot a few times, that's not going to make you well trained to deal with violent situations where you're in fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you actually have to be trained to do. And so you get that kind of training if you're going to be in the military or if you're going to be a Navy SEAL. That's where you get that kind of training. We're not going to be training millions of people for an event that almost none of them are ever going to encounter, even for something as simple as CPR. You have to keep getting re-upped. You have to keep getting your training every year or two.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And
absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So if you're going to have somebody well-trained enough to be a good guy with a gun, I mean, if you watch Hawaii 5-0, right? Hawaii 5-0, you have McGarrett and in the new Hawaii 5-0.
Hmm.
McGarrett is an ex-SEAL.
Right.
That's why he's such a good guy with a gun. If you're a Navy SEAL, that's one thing. How many people are Navy SEALs?
Well, not very many.
And how many people are carrying that are Navy SEALs?
Probably not that many.
Right. And yeah. You don't have to have, I don't think you have to have training even to own a gun. You just have to have a background check, and then you can purchase one.
It's a wise idea to take an NRA pistol course, for sure.
But nobody... But it's not like...
You know, I see the signs out. I mean, you see signs out in front of people's houses.
Sure.
Where someone is an NRA instructor.
Yeah.
And that's what the NRA was originally set to do. That's what they did. They taught people how to use firearms safely.
Right.
That's the whole point.
Right.
What's happened is it's gotten crazy. It's just there's too much money to be made, and so it's crazy now. But that's what we deal with. That's
right.
All, that's it. That's what we deal with. So, you know, it's...
But you have a situation where... So for when you're driving a car, you have to take driver's ed. You have to get educated on how to drive a car. Although you don't have to take driver's ed. You just have to prove that you know how to drive a car, and you have to pass a driving test. And the driving test... shows you that you know the rules of the road, and you know how to parallel park, and you know how to use your turn signals and safely operate a car. And that's, and you have to go through this test before you get licensed. And you know, cars are deadly. They can kill people. And but if they're used correctly, they don't. I mean, they're not intended to be weapons, but they certainly can be, and they certainly can kill people quite easily. And so it makes sense that you're going to have education and you're going to have licensing so people can safely drive cars, because that's going to, somebody who has a license, who paid attention in class, is going to be less likely to hurt somebody or themselves in a car. So doesn't it make sense when a gun is intended to kill people and animals? That's what it's for. I mean, think about that, people. I know that there are people there who are like, oh yeah, but I like to go to the shooting range and I like to shoot at targets. Yes. Well, shooting in being in the shooting range and shooting at targets is practice for what the guns were really intended. People didn't invent guns to shoot at targets. They were invented to kill people and animals. I'm not sure which first. What do you think, people or animals?
Because I think it's probably animals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you want to go hunting, that's one thing. But they were invented to kill, or at least wound, people and animals. That's what they're for. Mm-hmm. And so when you're doing target practice, you're practicing targets, and the ultimate target is a living being, which is really kind of scary when you think about it. That's what it's for. It is intended for killing. Cars are not intended for killing. Cars are intended to get you from here to there. So there is a difference there. I mean, I will drive a car. I don't really have an interest in shooting a gun. And if you do, that's okay. But shouldn't a person who wants to shoot a gun have a training course and a license? It seems like you ought to.
It makes a lot more sense.
Even with vehicles, you have to have special kinds of licenses to operate special kinds of vehicles. Do you have to have a special license to drive a motorcycle?
Yes.
You do. So you
have
to have
a different license than a regular car license.
Okay. So you have to have a license to drive a motorcycle. You have to have one to drive a car. And then if you're going to drive a commercial vehicle, don't you have to have a different license for that?
Yeah.
So depending on the kind of gun you're going to be using, shouldn't you have to have a license for that? How hard would it be to have a license to, you have to have a license to have a pistol, something, a concealed carry weapon, and you have to have a license to operate a rifle. And then and then semi-automatics, we just don't give those out.
No.
They're only given out to law enforcement or SWAT or the military.
Right. That used to be what they were. Right.
Right. And shouldn't we go back to that?
I think so.
Yeah. That would help a lot of problems. If you had to have a license, then you couldn't, not just anybody couldn't have a gun, because you get in trouble if you're caught driving a car without a license, right? Or with an expired license.
Correct.
So now people could get in trouble for having guns without licenses. But then this gets into the idea of now what do? Do you raid people's houses because you're going to change the laws? The thing is,
you
Americans,
can't. It's got to become a voluntary thing.
Americans are not going to go down without a fight. Whereas, places like I think every other civilized country, every other industrialized country that had gun violence, the people are willing to modify the laws right away.
Right.
I think America's the only place where they're not.
Right.
And
right.
So it would solve a lot of problems if people really had to be licensed. And then, of course, you could vet them for mental illness as well.
Sure, I agree. Yeah. So you asked earlier how the U.S. compares with the highest rates of violent gun deaths in North Africa and the Middle East, for instance. United States is on the top of the list.
Yeah.
Followed by Afghanistan, Iraq, Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey.
Well, before
Yemen,
you go any further.
I mean,
so
on down the list. It's
so
crazy.
What's number two?
That's just Afghanistan.
Okay.
Which is a war zone.
Right. So now, do you have an actual stat?
4.4. This is, I believe this is from 2017. I don't seem to, yes.
That's okay.
From 2000, for every 100,000 people, 4.43 deaths per 100,000 in the United States, 3.96 in Afghanistan.
It's not that much less.
3.54 in Iraq, 2.2 in Lebanon, 1.53 in Jordan, 1.24. This is a very faint sight here. It's hard to see. Anyway, and on and on and on, all the way down to...
they mention Israel?
Israel is not on here, but the United Arab Emirates is here at 0.57 per 100,000.
Okay. Do you have any stats on Western countries, you know, non-Arabic countries? Because those places have gun violence problems because they have a lot of war zone problems.
And then there's, this has it all broken down by different regions here, which is a little bit. So you're looking at, sub-Saharan Africa. They've got that listed. They've got... North Africa and the Middle East, we did. This would be East, Southeast, and South Asia. The Philippines is a very, very scary place to live.
Uh-huh.
Very
so
scary
what's
place.
Their, so what's their stat?
9.2 per 100,000.
And what's ours?
4.43.
So it's worse in the Philippines.
Yeah, and Thailand is just behind us. And then there's a whole bunch of drop-offs, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is kind of interesting. And
what
then,
about like France and Britain?
And then worldwide, here we are, worldwide. Okay, worldwide, we at 4.43, we look pretty good because El Salvador is at 43.11. Venezuela, 42.15. Guatemala, 29.6. Honduras, 24.68. Jamaica, 23.57. Colombia, 22.40.
What did you say we are 44?
We're at 4.43.
4.43 per 100,000, and they're at like 29 per 100,000?
Yeah.
Wow. So South America has a serious problem.
South and Central America. Yeah.
Yeah. They're way ahead of
us. They're way ahead of us.
My goodness.
Yeah. Well, so, you look at it from different perspectives that way, but it's.
And then we wonder why they're coming here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're coming here from the Philippines as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Singapore's not good either. Japan, not good.
Really?
Indonesia. Yeah.
They have more gun deaths per 100,000 than
we do?
Oh,
wait a minute. Scratch that. No, this is the other side. This is on the light side. The least amount of gun deaths are Singapore, Japan, Indonesia, Oman, China, South Korea, United Kingdom, Iceland, Bangladesh, and Romania.
No kidding. What about just Western Europe? Do you have any numbers for Western Europe?
I'm looking. I don't know if they have Western Europe
so
in
we'll,
here. I'm
you,
still
if,
looking.
If you find that, let us know.
Yeah. No, that's not on here.
Okay. So let's talk about the mental illness piece. That mental illness and violent video games, because the Orange Man thinks that that's part of the problem. The Orange Man said that. Who knows what he thinks?
Who
I don't
knows?
Think he thinks. But
who
anyway.
Knows? I don't know if well, never mind. I can't go there.
Right. So anyway, so is that a factor? So this guy Hemingway says that there are a range of things that could play a role in prevention, like better parenting, less racism, better education, more job opportunities. They all of those might have an effect on reducing shootings, and you want to improve all the things. But the most cost-effective interventions involve, guess what? Doing something about guns. And if you look at all of the, a lot of pundits are, unless they're very, they're conservative, a lot of the pundits are saying, let's do something about guns. That's the fastest thing to do because places where there's less access to guns, they have less gun deaths. Right. And there's no evidence that the U.S. has more mental health issues, especially violent mental health issues. And you have to remember, too, that just because you're mentally ill doesn't mean you're going to be violent. If you're mentally ill, that doesn't make you more likely to be violent than the general population. And so doing something about mental illness isn't necessarily going to cut it. I mean, it's going to help to an extent, because if you have someone who's disaffected and unhappy and angry and then has access to a gun, they're going to be more likely to do this. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't have access to a gun, they can't shoot.
Yeah.
So our guns and our permissive gun laws are what make us different than France, Italy, the Netherlands, South Korea, New Zealand, and Japan, and all those other places you said. Oman.
Right. Oman. Yeah.
And why does it seem like law-abiding American gun owners fear restrictions like background checks, elimination of high-capacity magazines, bump stocks, and assault rifles? How would gun owners be affected? So the thing that makes us the elephant in the room is that we have weak gun laws. We just have really weak gun laws. That's the thing that makes us different than all those other countries. Most gun owners, by the way, favor universal background checks. And when they're surveyed, that's what they say. And they also, most gun owners favor the elimination of military weapons in everybody's hands. If you ask them whether they feel comfortable with some of the people in this country who own guns legally, they would say no. So really responsible gun owners would like to see less military weapons, and they're fine with universal background checks.
You know, the Harvard Institute of Politics did a survey on Americans 18 to 29 years old on their concerns that driving them to cast a ballot. Number one, gun violence.
Yeah.
Number one, not health care, not any of these other things that are going on, gun violence.
Well, if you're already dead, what difference does it make what your
health
is?
I mean, that's from the Harvard Institute of Politics.
So, right.
Which would be a rather conservative organization, if I'm not mistaken. 280,000 to 520,000 bump stocks are currently in circulation right now.
Uh-huh.
Not good.
So you know that you're more likely to have a suicide in a home. You're more likely to have a suicide in a home if there's a gun in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
So there's, you know, we want to have more guidelines for selling. So we're like, what's going to flip people? What's going to change the policies? And it doesn't look like any one mass shooting is going to make the difference. In the countries where there's been a mass shooting, enough conservatives have been willing to step up and say enough is enough. Here, we don't have that. We have... you know, in Australia, their conservative government said, if we get voted out by our conservative colleagues, we just can't stand this anymore. And I don't know why, but we haven't reached that point.
The solution seems to be that if there were more people who were less worried about life in general, that if you take a look at the stats across the globe, the people that have the easiest lifestyles, the happiest people in the world, you know, that sort of thing, they don't have gun violence because they have they tend to be more socialist oriented countries.
That's right. You know, they don't have gun violence like this in Canada. Mm-hmm. They don't have gun violence like this in most of Western Europe.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So the fact is that people are in a state of unrest in the United States.
Right.
And I think that's why it is created. And we also have the means to be able to do this because we're not restricted in any way from doing that. And, you know, it goes way, way back. I mean, the Second Amendment goes way back to the militia. It goes way, way back. And
there are those who say that the Second Amendment is misinterpreted, that the idea of having a militia doesn't mean that there should be a gun in every house.
That's correct. And by the way, those guns required a reload rate of, I don't know, 15 or 20 seconds.
Yeah.
One shot fired. That's
right.
It. So, you know, I mean, that's just kind of nuts. But
back
that's
in
what
the day.
Back in
yes.
the day. Back in the day.
And one of the things they talk about, it's... you know, the people who are at risk, the interpersonal gun violence, there's certainly gun violence in socioeconomically depressed communities, but there's mm-hmm. also there's an increase in public mass shootings. It's white people and upper middle class yeah. children who are at risk now.
Right. And it used to be that you worried about being in the inner city because the inner city, like you take, you know, certain sections of, let's say, our state, Hartford, New Haven and Bridgeport, which should be the three bigger cities. And you'd worry about being in the inner city and the violence and all. But it's we're really what we need to watch out for is young, educated white boy. Because it's like there's this Caucasian crime that's happening right now. And almost, not almost every, if you take a look at all of these violent acts, it was committed by middle and upper middle income Caucasian
Did you
folks.
Know that Amnesty so. International put out a travel warning for the United States?
No, for what?
Yeah, they did. There's... So the Amnesty International put out a travel warning for the United States. Yep. And the travel warning, I'm trying to find I just remembered that happened. They usually put out travel warnings. They usually put out travel warnings for countries where it might not be safe to travel because there's violence. So they put out a travel advisory for the United States. And I'm going to read it to you because it's pretty freaky. So I first found it. Sarah Silverman had posted it on one of her on her Twitter account. So here it is. Amnesty International Travel Advisory, United States of America. The Amnesty International Travel Advisory for the country of the United States of America calls on people worldwide to exercise caution and have an emergency contingency plan when traveling throughout the USA. This travel advisory is being issued in light of ongoing high levels of gun violence in the country. If you decide to travel to the United States, be extra vigilant at all times and be wary of the ubiquity of firearms among the population. Avoid places where large numbers of people gather, especially cultural events, places of worship, schools, and shopping malls. Exercise increased caution when visiting local bars, nightclubs, and casinos. So that's their black box warning. Depending on the traveler's gender, identity, race, country of origin, ethnic background, or sexual orientation, they may be at higher risk of being targeted with gun violence and should plan accordingly. Under international human rights law, the United States has an obligation to enact a range of measures at the federal, state, and local levels to regulate access to firearms and to protect the rights of people to live and move about freely without the threat of gun violence. The government has not taken sufficient steps to meet this obligation. That's pretty incredible. I mean, usually you're used to seeing warnings, travel advisories like that in, you know, for other countries. We think of, you know, in South America, that there's going to be, you know, advisories like that. But now we have one for the United States, and we should be embarrassed. We should do something about it. It's pretty incredible. The thing is, I'm a naturopathic physician, and what I do is I have to solve very confusing puzzles about people's health. And I have to work, you know, people come in and they have all kinds of things going on. They have all kinds of joint pain. They might have tick-borne illness. They have pain in various places in their bodies. They have all kinds of digestive issues. They have allergies. Some people have cancer. And I have to figure out how to make their lives better and help them to live a happier life with everyday things that go on in people's bodies. As a physician, when I think about a gun is a simple thing that, when it's used the way it's intended to use, can directly hurt my patients. And it in 2 minutes, the person can go from healthy to dying. And so as a physician, guns make me, I'm very frightened of guns. I'm not, and I admit that, you know, some of you are out there and you're like, well, I have a gun and I use it in my everyday life. And I understand where you're coming from, but I do have a gun for my everyday life and I like to hunt. And some of you are going, well, nobody's taking my guns away from me. And that's where you stand. And I'm a person, I'm just not interested in having a gun. But one of the reasons why is it's my job to ensure the health and safety of people. And I'm in the business of finding ways for people to be happier and healthier in their lives. And, you know, at its very, very basic level. Now, I understand if you enjoy shooting and shooting is something you think is fun and you like to go to target practice and go to the range and stuff like that, that's fine, as long as you're not hurting yourself or anyone else. But for me, it's an implement of violence. The reason it was created was to kill something or at least injure it. That's what it's for. So it doesn't make it's an internal conflict for me as a physician. And so it makes sense to me to find ways to control what's going on with guns. If people could have guns and there were far, far less gun deaths, and we didn't have a travel advisory from Amnesty International, organization that vets the safety of countries around the world and tries to figure out ways to make places more peaceful. So we have a travel advisory, you know, like we were a country where there's ongoing violence. Well, guess what? Now we're a country where there's ongoing violence. We should be ashamed and we should do something about it. I'm going to throw something else out there. And this is something that I wonder about. Now, Ron's made the point that we are going to tend to have more shootings in the United States because we live in a country where people are somewhat desperate right now. One of the things that's really difficult for people is healthcare. If something happens to you, and you have a health issue, you have to go to the doctor, and it somehow has to get paid for privately, whether it's out of your pocket or whether it's by insurance. So healthcare is a huge strain on the American public. And, you know, there are many, and we also have an economy that's changing so that a lot of people don't have jobs or people are underemployed. And we talk about how unemployment is low, but people are scrambling and having several jobs just to make ends meet. And, you know, they have to, and housing costs are out of control. Healthcare costs are out of control. So it's very hard for people to live. And, you know, when I was a kid, when I was, you know, coming of age, you could go to college and get a 4-year degree. You could even go get an associate's or not even necessarily get a degree. And you could go out and get some kind of job where you could make a good living and live your life, because we had a more industrialized economy. Now we have much more of a service economy. We have more of an IT and specialized economy. And you can't expect to go to college and just get a job. Training is extremely specialized now. And students are coming out of college with incredible students. That's the other thing. People can't go to college. People think twice about going to college because why do I want to come out of college with a $300,000 student loan and you know, doubtful job prospects. So less people are going to start going to college unless we do something about loan forgiveness and we do socialize the education system more. Because access to college is going to go to the very wealthy. And then it's going to be meaningless because your average working class people are not going to be educated in that way. And are they going to be able to afford to get trained to do whatever jobs there are? And if we have more service-based economy and less industrial economy, the jobs that are out there are not going to be they're not going to be very lucrative. So we have this change in our economy. And so if you're a middle-class person who feels isolated, and you know, so who is doing that? That's the question. Who's doing the shootings? They're generally disaffected young white men, right?
Right, exactly.
Yes. And so that's who it is. And so these are people who feel like they have nowhere to go in their life. They have nowhere to head in their life. They're somehow they got disaffected. I will make a case that there's a nutritional component too. That there's a way that there's a way that they became disaffected enough that they thought that they could do this. There's definitely online communities that are encouraging this. They do see violence in the media. I think the worst problem is that they have the access to the guns. But you're going to be more likely to do something like this if your nutrition is off, because if you're not eating your veg, I mean, this is going to sound silly and trite, but if you're not eating your veggies, you're not going to have as much magnesium. You're not going to have
the magnesium in the soil and the destruction
it's
of the magnesium in the soil.
Magnesium, and it's also essential fatty acids. People don't get their essential fatty acids, so they don't get their fish oil. They're not eating their nuts and seeds. They're not eating fish. They're just generally eating a poor quality diet that doesn't have the nutrients, because I can take it. If you don't have enough magnesium, you're not going to be calm. Magnesium makes you calm. It helps you sleep. It makes your muscles less tense. It helps you manage your neurotransmitters. B vitamins also help you manage your neurotransmitters. Adequate protein helps you to make neurotransmitters. And then essential fatty acids help your nerves to work better and to be less reactive. If you have deficits in all of those things and you're eating just a high carb standard American diet, you're going to be more likely to have signs like you're mentally, I mean, you may or may not be definitively mentally ill, but you're going to be more agitated. And we have a population that I can tell you is more agitated, but from what I see in the economy and what I see in society. And then we have a so-called leader who foments this. He makes people angrier. How many times have you gotten angry thinking about the current administration? Think about that. I can tell you that one of the things when I ask my patients, is there anything in their lives that's stressing them out? What's making you feel upset or stressful in your life? One of the things they'll say is the current administration. They'll say politics. They're really, really upset about what's going on. And so whichever side you're on, people are up in arms. There's outrage culture right now. And then people are getting outrage fatigue. And so it's exhausting and it's upsetting and you just don't know if you're safe. The big thing is like the Amnesty International travel. There's this travel advisory. You're afraid to go to the movies, the mall, the restaurant, the church, the synagogue. You're afraid to go
Walmart.
You're afraid to go to concerts, places where people gather, because you just never know where it's going to happen. Basically, nobody is safe until we figure this out. Nobody is safe. So I'm sorry. That's kind of a, you know, that. But I felt like I had to talk about this today because, as I said, it's a health issue. It's making my patients anxious. It's making the society anxious, making people upset. It's making it so people can't rest as well. It's making people so, as Amnesty International warns, you can't move about freely in society without thinking about whether you might be killed. It's really, really sad. So I hope that we can do something about this. I hope we can vote in people who are going to do something about this. I think we need gun reform. I really think we do. And I think a big thing that's going to help would be if we had to license gun owners the way we license people who drive cars, and at the same level where you have to have a license for the varying types and levels of guns. There's a different license for concealed carry arms. There's a different license for rifles, hunting rifles. And the only people who get semi-automatics and above are, you know, people who need them, like SWAT teams and active military duty, and only the active military duty who needs them, the squadrons and the people who are defined as needing those. And that's it. So, and most gun owners in the United States don't think that the general population needs automatics and semi-automatics. All right. So that's all. Do you have anything else to say?
I had a caller who was calling in and he just wanted to talk a little bit about it. He felt the same way. He feels that there's, we over-dramatize it through the media and therefore it gives other people ideas that they might want to try and do this. And he said that there's, and he makes a point. He definitely makes a point.
Well, there's we have an awful lot of
exposure to it. And I said, you know, I totally agree with him that we get awful lot of coverage about this. But I say that we should never, ever, from this point on, identify who the shooter is. Just that there was a shooter. So they're not glorified. So therefore, they're not, you know, worshipped in any way.
Right.
You know, and I think that would help. But I don't know, you know, because we were saying, what do we do? How do we fix this? How do we cure this? Well, people need to be happier, and we need to stop identifying these folks as
so it's
because we're giving them what they're looking for
right.
by identifying them.
Well, and it's a multiple, forgive my terminology, but a multiple hit theory. There's a number of things we need to do. I think there needs to be gun licensing. I think there needs to be, a change in society. The society needs to be changed so we're not as economically distressed. by, you know, with education and with healthcare. There does need to be more access to mental health. People need to be educated in how to eat healthfully, and healthful food needs to be available to people, and people have to be able to access it. I have to wonder what would happen if people had more access to produce in general, which, as we know, is not subsidized by the government. What's subsidized is grains, and grains are the most inflammatory thing you can eat, grains and sugars. People don't get their... So they don't get their produce as easily. They don't get their essential fatty acids. They don't get their protein as easily, things that are not subsidized. So what you need to subsidize so that people can get access to them is produce. You need produce and healthy protein. And so that needs to be an issue. And society just needs to be more happy in general. And I don't think we rank very high in general levels of happiness in the United States, because people struggle economically. And these young disaffected men, they don't know who they are. They don't have a direction in life. And I think it's harder to find that in our society as it is now. All right, so I have to go. I hope I gave you some food for thought today. In my second to last Radio Naturopath in the month of August 2019. So. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You may also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions and comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.